This episode sponsored by We Feed Raw. This 4th of July, while you're grilling real food, why is your dog still eating processed filler? We Feed Raw makes it easy to upgrade your dog's bowl with complete, balanced raw meals made from high-quality meat and nutrient-rich organs, with no fillers and no artificial preservatives. It arrives frozen, ready to serve, and made to help your dog thrive from nose to tail. New customers can save $100. That's $50 off your first two boxes when you start a new meal plan subscription by July 7th. We Feed Raw makes feeding real raw meals easy with personalized plans delivered right to your door. Visit wefeedraw.com. That's WEFEEDRAW.com. We Feed Raw gives your best friend real food they'll love.
Time for Vanessa and Gallant.
That sounds good. I'll have that.
Featuring Vanessa Richardson.
This is not a common opinion. This is not a popular opinion.
And Paul Gallant.
I think for the average person that sees me, they don't know that I'm a cat dad.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
So there's some construction going on in the building, apparently, because I walked in the women's bathroom and there was a man. It was a little awkward.
That's his right.
He didn't speak English, so I didn't know what to say to him. He didn't know what to say to me.
It was
we were looking at each other, and so I walked out. So I still have to pee. Just FYI.
Just peak intolerance by Vanessa. Offended by a man going in the women's bathroom. When women cut the line at the bar of men in the men's room all the time. These broads.
That doesn't happen all the time.
It happens enough for me to say it happens all the time. Once a weekend? Oh, here I am waiting in line to go peeing, standing up, and someone has to cut the line and use one of the stalls, and they're going to be in there for 5 minutes,
you know,
10
well,
minutes.
We need more women do need more bathrooms than men, though, because y'all go super
true.
Quick. You whip it out. You get it done. It's
but
more
you
complicated
guys,
for women.
Yeah, you guys have to bring a friend in so that you can
yes.
talk some trash
yes,
about somebody
do.
That you don't want to do it right in front of their
Absolutely.
Face.
Absolutely. That's exactly right. We go to the bathroom for more than just using the bathroom. So maybe I'll get a pee break soon. But we are rolling along on a Wednesday. Happy hump day.
Thank you very much.
And it was a great day for the Astros.
Happy May the 4th as well.
Yeah. Oh, May the 4th be with you. Yes.
It's Mike Tyson saying things about Star Wars. How about that?
Great day for the Houston Astros yesterday. And in some ways, a very historic day as Astros not only get a win, another shutout, second shutout in a row, but Dusty Baker becomes the first African-American manager to reach 2,000 wins. Great day for him.
Right, and only 12 managers in baseball history have reached that number. He is number 12 after the game, Julia Morales. I don't know why I said Julia Morales.
Really?
It's one of those, you know, I used to always say Julio Jones, and I say Julia Morales.
I cannot believe you made that mistake.
Julia Morales, she spoke with Dusty
after he won. This is a great interview.
Well, it feels great. Thank you. Thanks to everybody. Thanks for all the support. Thanks to the players, because I couldn't do it without them. And when I came here, I talked to Jim Crane, and I said, hey, I'd like to be here at least through 2000. And so now we got to add on to 2000. You know what I'm saying?
So we'll see where things go going forward for Dusty Baker, because you hear him say, well, I hope I'll be here for 2000. Makes you wonder a bit about how much longer he's potentially going to be manager of the Astros, but you would assume he would be as long as this team is a World Series contender, which of course they are pretty much by default every single year, even if they are still struggling to score runs a little bit. They got a lot of home runs last night. Good job, Jeremy Pena, Jordan Alvarez, and Jose Altuve as well. But it got me thinking last night, Vanessa, is Dusty Baker somebody that's already entering into the conversation for best coaches in Houston sports history? And you can ask that question because it's really not as far as Houston sports history goes. There's really not that many that you can really look at and say, yeah, this guy's one of the tops. You have in
Rudy T, baby.
In the NBA, you have Rudy T. Rudy T, who had 500 wins, I think, almost with the Houston Rockets. He also has a ton of playoff wins, playoff appearances, two titles as well. You have in college basketball, you have Guy V. Lewis, who was amazing with the Cougs. He had 27 straight winning seasons, 14 years with 20 or more wins, 14 NCAA tournament trips, 5 Final Fours, 2 appearances in the national title. And you also have A.J. Hinch, because he's the only other guy that has won a title. One World Series win, two World Series appearances, three ALCS appearances, four playoff appearances. And then after that, I mean, it's not a great group to select from. I mean, maybe Kelvin Sampson has put himself into that conversation with what he has done over the last couple of years, but it's a small sample size. But, I mean, he's not that far off from potentially being looked at as one of Houston's best coaches ever, especially should he actually kick the door down and win a World Series with the Astros this year.
If he can win a World Series here in Houston, he's on the list and it's not even close. Obviously, Rudy T forever and always will be on there because of the championship.
Never underestimate the heart of a champion.
Heart of a champion, baby. Guy V. Lewis, will we ever see another season like that here with Houston basketball or consecutive straight seasons? Somebody there for that long.
Samson's,
I love Kelvin,
close,
but, he's not,
but that's hard to
he's
do.
He's not going to stick around for as long as Guy V. Lewis did.
I wonder. I think he might. I really
think
he might.
Like die coaching.
Well, I don't know that he's going to go somewhere else,
yeah.
You know?
No. I think he retires and Houston.
You're definitely right, though. But
27 straight winning seasons.
Yeah, that's
not going to happen.
That's not.
No offense. Yes,
unless he's coaching when he's 100 or right. Something like that, which, you know what? Props to him. Let's not put bad vibes out on
no
the show.
No ageism.
Right. But, what Guy V. Lewis did with Fi Slam and Gemma, of course, too. It's unbelievable. The recruiting he was doing, too, to get Hakeem Olajuwon here and, you know, Clyde Drexler amongst many other players.
If Dusty Baker wins a World Series, that would mean that he won one and then went to another, which would be the same as AJ Hinch.
Mm-hmm.
Where do those two match up?
Look,
against each other.
You know, it's always going to be hard to say that Baker's better than Hinch because Hinch was here first and Hinch was a part of changing the culture here.
Right.
You know, starting in 2015 when they first made the playoffs and then 2017 winning the World Series for the first time. 2018 not being able to defend it, but 2019 getting damn close to getting back. He started this. Dusty Baker takes over. So I think that if you want to make an argument against Dusty Baker as one of the best coaches in Houston sports history because you feel like being that guy today, you could make the comparison to what you had with the Dallas Cowboys where Jimmy Johnson takes things over, Jimmy Johnson turns things around, Barry Switzer comes in at the very end, and he wins the third Super Bowl that the Cowboys won in the 1990s.
Comparison.
Yeah.
It's a great comparison.
I do what I do.
Our text line says, 4518 says, Rudy T, then everyone else, honorary mention for AJ. I think AJ winning a World Series puts him, if we're talking Mount Rushmore, definitely on the Mount Rushmore, for sure.
The Mount Rushmore is definitively Guy V. Lewis, Rudy Tomjanovich, and AJ Hinch, by default. Like, you don't even really have a Houston football coach in the running. I mean, shoot, you could make a strong argument that Tom Herman is the best football coach in Houston history. You really could, because who are you looking at? Bum Phillips with the Oilers?
Right.
The Texans have one head coach that has been plus 500 ever, Bill O'Brien, by like two games.
Is he on the Mount Rushmore?
No.
That was a joke. Don't kill me.
Right, exactly. So, and I mean, Tom Herman takes over after Kevin Sumlin, after Art Briles, and Jack Pardee was at UH for a little bit. Also, he was with the Oilers for a little bit and had some nice years in the early 90s. So maybe you could put Pardee in that conversation. But it really is like after those three, wide open. And I feel like that texter, you got to bring up Guy V. Lewis. What Guy V. Lewis did is honestly incredible. I know that, you know, we take a look in college basketball and you're like, well, he hasn't won a national title. But it's so damn hard to win a national title. You know,
yeah.
Like now that Coach K and Jay Wright are gone, like Bill Self's the only guy who's got multiple national titles outside of Rick Disgraced Pitino.
Lance McCullers Jr. did give an update on his health.
He
said that they're more focused on velocity than distance.
Okay.
It wasn't like an in-depth update, but I liked hearing from Lance McCullers Jr. But I think what you and I have also talked about is that right now it's more an issue with bats than it is anything pitching-wise. Pitching-wise, they're actually doing okay on Odorizzi and Javier. They do two shutout wins in a row against your side chick.
I mean, my side chick is not performing.
If you... Yes.
If you would have told me
that we were going to be more worried about the bats than pitching when Lance McCullers Jr. was out, I don't know that I would have believed you, but that's where we're at.
Seriously, I wouldn't have either. And you got to give Javier credit for a couple of consistent starts in a row. Of course, we did it. Odorizzi, we gave him his flowers yesterday. You wonder how long it's going to last. I'll be honest. Like I'll hear things about Lance McCullers, and I'll believe it when I see it. I don't know when he'll be back, and I don't know... I have the pessimistic mindset. I am putting the negative vibes out after saying, don't put out negative vibes, where I'm like, I never know with him, you know? I wonder how they're going to feel about that contract down the road. It's a lot of money, and to give to a guy that has, in terms of availability, regularly had stretches where he has missed time.
The injury bug definitely has gotten to Lance McCullers Jr. on more than one occasion. The Astros will play the Mariners today at 1:10 p.m. But then, speaking of A.J. Hinch, they face the Detroit Tigers, and the Tigers come to town tomorrow as well as Friday and Saturday.
Detroit!
Should be a fun one.
We do have a couple more texts at 713-780-3776. This person, not a Dusty Baker fan. And there's a lot of people that aren't Dusty Baker fans. Laughing my ass off. Dusty, a.k.a. the Toothpick Slayer, is baseball's all-time greatest failure as a manager.
What?
That's extreme.
All-time greatest failure is very extreme.
Who would be baseball's all-time greatest failure as a manager?
I mean, it would be have to be somebody that didn't last long, that had a bunch of losing seasons, and certainly nobody that has been to a World Series.
I would imagine
Give me a break.
I imagine it's some guy named Scooter McGraw or something like that in the 1910s who was just drunk every single day that he showed up on the job. Or you could just argue that whoever stuck with the Cincinnati Reds for this year.
That's a great point.
They're 3-19 to open things
up. Actually, somebody wrote on the Twitch line something interesting. There was a WNBA team in Houston, and they were very good.
Yeah, my bad. I would get crucified in Seattle for not being a WNBA team.
Yeah, you would.
Right. Houston Comets, RIP. You forget because they were taken from us too soon. RIP. Pour one out. Van Chancellor, legend. Everyone knows his name. Who could forget?
He's saying that sarcastically.
I'm not saying it sarcastically. Honestly, like Van Chancellor, the greatest coach in Houston sports history. 4 titles.
You think that he could be...
all about the rings.
You think that he could be in the conversation
Of
the amount of rings?
I mean, he is the conversation.
I got to tell you, though, I'm a woman and I missed that, too. I didn't even think about the Houston Comets.
I'm not going to lie. It was interesting every now and then up in Seattle. I did not go out of my way to watch it. I'll be perfectly honest.
7223 says Bill Yeoman definitely on the list. Hosts showing their ages. Okay, so just...
We aren't 100 years old. He was at the University of Houston. I don't think he's there.
FYI, this is a discussion. Yeah. So we're like wanting you guys to tell us who you think.
Bill Yeoman was at the was with the Cougs for like 1,000 years, like back in the day. But, you know, I wonder just because of the fact that back then it was so damn hard to win a national title when UH was in the Southwest Conference. Was that ever a remote possibility for them? Of winning a national title or anything like that? Honestly, off the top of my head, I don't know. And yes, we are showing our age. We weren't alive.
Right. We were not alive.
Bill Yeo Man did Yeoman's work, that's for sure.
Bill Yeoman.
The Yeoman of the Houston Mount Rushmore of coaches. That's for sure.
Van Chancellor was a great one. Rudy T and A.J. Hinch, some of the obvious answers. So we want to know who you all think greatest coach, manager, leader in Houston sports history.
713-780-3776, 713-780-ESPN.
And we're going to get you guys' take on that. Feel free to call us as well. We have Juan waiting, and we'll get to him after the break. Coming up, we're going to talk about Lance McCullers Jr., the greatest coaches in Houston sports history, plus a little bit NBA. That's next.
This is Heisman Trophy winner, College Football Hall of Famer Eddie George, and you're listening to ESPN 97.5.
You're back with Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
Hey, 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 happy hump day. I'm Vanessa Richardson, got Paul Gallant with me, got Sean Mapes, our producer, and we are going to go to the phone lines where we have Juan from Cypress who wants to chime in on some Lance McCullers Jr. chatter. Hey, Juan.
Hey, guys. One of your customers, I love the show.
We love you.
Thank you.
I need to really get every Astros fan to take the beer goggles off.
Whoa.
For some reason, Lance McCullers is this pitcher that y'all look at with beer goggles. He's been a pitcher since 2015. You got Urquidy, you got Garcia, and then you got, I forgot the first one that broke his finger. Give me a little help. But those
young
pitchers, those three pitchers have all gotten to the 6th, 7th inning within their first 2 years. And McCullers could never get out early from the 3rd inning to the 5th inning. He'd waste all his pitches. And he had a little Giles in him. he got emotional, he would just come unglued. And so when he did break his finger, it was Arcidi that came in and actually righted the boat. But everybody put all the attention on McCullers. Yeah, McCullers had the pressure of those three young pitchers doing way better than he did, and all the time that he was there, he finally started getting past the seventh inning. And the guy hurt himself pitching with 26 breaking balls because he couldn't spot his fastball.
So you think we're giving Lance McCullers Jr. too much credit, too much props?
Yes. The guy has got electric stuff. He's got electric stuff. But if you really look, he's like 45 and 30. And the year that we had the big three.
Let's not look at wins, losses, won, though, to
yeah,
judge a pitcher.
Yeah, it strikes me as court-like quarterback wins, and, you know, is it actually a stat? But we appreciate your call, Juan, from Cyprus, and it is worth discussing. Are we giving Lance McCullers Jr. too many flowers?
You can't say beer goggles because of that electric stuff. I mean, whether you have the beer goggles on or not, he is hot. It is fun to watch him pitch. His stuff is absolutely filthy. And that's what you talk yourself into. But I think maybe, you know, he's arguing that the injury could have happened, at least from the sound of things, because of fastball location. I mean, when you throw that filthy stuff and you're twisting your elbow and doing all the stuff that you need to do to throw a curveball, you're lending yourself to potential elbow injuries and elbow issues. I think that his biggest problem is availability. I get where he's coming from, but are we going to really say to ourselves that Framber or Garcia or Urquidy are better than Lance? I'm not going that far. Lance has delivered in big-time postseason moments where with Framber, I mean, it's been inconsistent, and he's the only guy that I think that you would even entertain as potentially on the same playing field, I guess, as Lance McCullers, if you're going to have that. And he's so damn up and down. I mean, obviously you saw it, you know, against the Red Sox, he's great. Against the Braves, it's a totally different story.
Yeah, I mean, look, we know Lance McCullers Jr. has struggled with injury. We're certainly hoping that he doesn't have to undergo another Tommy John surgery. But, you know, somebody from the text line, 5847, says, I don't disagree with the caller. Lance has been given way too many props. When has he ever been healthy? What use is a player if he never plays? He's been healthy. I mean, obviously.
He has been healthy before. He is injured a lot. And I understand getting frustrated with somebody for being injured a whole lot. And I would more be frustrated with giving him that contract than I'd be frustrated with Lance McCullers.
That's a great point. Also, remember, though, he was a huge part of them winning the ALDS.
Yeah.
In Chicago with the when they played the White Sox. Or, I mean, he has helped them reach very important milestones on the way to the playoffs.
Just go back to Game 7 against the Yankees. You get to hold that over the Yankees forever because those morons couldn't hit a curveball, 26 straight curveballs. The dude just absolutely gassed them. I feel like McCullers' criticism, I get it at this point in time, and I am wondering when he's going to be back. But I am more looking at the contract that the Astros gave out as opposed to someone like George Springer than I'm looking at Lance McCullers is some guy who's like actually sucks, you know, like, which is I think the implication that Juan made. Maybe sucks is too strong, but
yeah.
He's good. He just needs to be out there, which is hard to get out.
Rolling along, we do want to touch on a topic that we had some reaction to. Somebody on the text line asked if Dusty Baker was the biggest failure as a manager ever, which I think is incredibly dramatic because
he's had some bad
playoff
moments.
Went to a World Series. Right. Let's start with that.
Right.
And although a lot of people have not agreed with many things, including primarily his pitching decisions.
Putting Kyle Tucker at 7.
And rotations. That is very dramatic. So our producer, the lovely Sean Mapes, has dug up a list of the worst managers in baseball. Sean, what do you have for us?
Yeah, so the list starts, or number one on the list is Buddy Bell.
It sounds like he would suck.
It is a very bad coach name. He actually got three different chances at three different franchises, only had one winning season in nine. He was part of a team in nine major league seasons, and he finished last place six times and never above third place. Again, we're comparing him to Dusty Baker.
This is Buddy Bell.
2,000 wins. Alan Trammell was only a coach for 3 years, which is seems like pretty good evidence of what it takes to be a bad coach. Okay. And he finished his coaching record with exactly 300 losses 3 years.
Who did he manage?
He managed the Detroit Tigers. He was a player there.
That's not his fault. You know, that's not his fault. He's stuck in Detroit.
So far, my vote is for the first one, Buddy. Who else we got?
Got Al Perdik. Great name, but not a great coach in the year. Let's see. Yeah, he had several, like, 11-game losing streaks, including one that finished when he got fired in July of 2004.
He's historic.
The Arizona Diamondbacks had a record of 5-23 when he got fired.
The Diamondbacks were wearing those stupid vest uniforms then. Not his fault. He couldn't help it. He was stuck. So, no, it's Buddy Bell. His name is Buddy. End of story.
I think we go with Buddy Bell.
There's also this guy. His coaching record isn't that bad. He's just on this list. But his name is Stump Merrill.
Yeah. Oh well. See, that's the kind of name I was
great
expecting
baseball name.
As the worst like manager. And I'm sure that like that guy was like probably showing up to games with a wood pipe and probably drinking like a bottle of rum as the game went on. We had another text too. This is in relation to Dusty because again. Doesn't take much to get into the top coaches in Houston sports history, especially if we're talking about winning a title, because that's why, you know, you could put A.J. Hinch in there, but it's also Guy V. Lewis and it's Rudy Tomjanovich. This texter says, from the 409, Dusty was given a World Series contender. His main job was to not screw it up. I believe the Astros are so good, they overcome Dusty's coaching.
They overcome Dusty's coaching?
I don't think a baseball manager can really do that much outside of setting lineups and determining whether or not to pull a pitcher. But the coaching, what coaching are they receiving from Dusty that's bad? Like, actually, Astros, I don't want you guys swinging at anything. We are a walks-only team.
Plus, every coach has their brand, their reputation, whatever you want to say. And Dusty Baker was never known as the guy that was going to be super controlling. I mean, when he's at the podium, we'll hear him say things like, these are grown men, these are adults. He's not, you know, monitoring what they do every move.
He's been to two World Series in his career, and he has 2,000 wins. Is he the greatest failure in managing history? Like, my God, dude, I want to know your standards.
Right.
Do your children live up to those standards? Are they failures too?
Yeah, it's like
seriously, I'm wondering. Like that, those poor kids. Like, what do they have to do? Dad, I got an A+ today. Not good enough, son. I literally got 100. Well, why didn't you answer any of the bonus questions, huh?
Dusty Baker had a funny quote yesterday, by the way, too. After he had won his 2000th game. He's like, somebody asked if he was going to get emotional. Do we have that quote from him?
I couldn't find it. I looked for it afterwards, Vanessa.
It was essentially this. He said, I don't cry because my daddy used to say, if you want to cry, I'll give you something to cry about. And he would reach for his belt.
It was like, damn, dude. Like, way to just completely change the mood in the middle of this celebratory press conference. And then he pulled out of it because he started speaking pretty good Spanish afterwards. And by pretty good Spanish, I mean, it sounded good. I wouldn't know. I only do Duolingo.
Dusty Baker is one of my favorite coaches that I've ever covered, and I love him dearly. So congratulations to Dusty Baker on 2,000
También.
Wins. All right, before we get you out of here for the next segment, I do want to talk about the 2022 Listener Appreciation Party.
Huzzah!
This is going to be fun.
Next week, baby.
Join us along with our special guest from ESPN, Keyshawn Johnson. That's Wednesday, May 11th, so a week from today at St. Arnold Brewery. We'll be broadcasting live from noon to 9. We got great beer, delicious food, door prizes, and Chef Ryan at St. Arnold even came up with a special pizza Keyshawn called Just Give Me the Damn Pizza, of course, in homage to his book, Just Give Me the Damn Ball.
He wrote that in his second year in the NFL.
He had that confidence, baby.
What
Wednesday, May 11th, Listener Appreciation Party. It's us. It's Keyshawn Johnson. It's the whole station. Be there or be square.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5. You're listening to Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
All right, we talk about the AFC South a lot on this show, obviously with the Texans being in that division. And one of the things we've discussed, especially after the draft, is what we see for the AFC South this coming season. A lot of changes on the Colts roster. You have Trevor Lawrence and Doug Peterson trying to create something, and they get that number one overall pick. And of course, you have the Tennessee Titans, which our producer Sean Mapes so astutely put, their uniforms do look like they're from like Kmart. It's the blue on blue.
Yeah, and the helmets, too. Like, what's going on with the stripe down the middle? Ooh, it's a sword. Look at us.
I also just think it's a very basic franchise. It's Nashville. It's basic.
It's a little bit USFL. It's a little bit just, it's very much, or like any given Sunday where they can't get a real NFL team.
I got a better name for them. You got the Utah Jazz, formerly the New Orleans Jazz. Why not the Nashville Country? But you say Contray.
Oh, God.
No?
I mean, that's like full basic.
Well, I mean, that's what they are.
But yeah, the T with the flames.
The Nashville Bachelorette Party.
Yeah, the Nashville. Nashville's not ready for us. Yeah, Erica, Nashville's not ready for you and your 10 girls in cowgirl hats. But Ryan Tannehill, quarterback of the Tennessee Titans, did cause some discussion yesterday. There were a lot of strong feelings both ways on this. The subject of Malik Willis being drafted by the Titans, and would Ryan Tannehill step up as, some would say, a mentor? Here was Tannehill's answer.
In a quarterback room in the same room, you know, we're competing against each other. We're, you know, watching the same tape. We're doing the same drills. I don't think it's my job to mentor him, but, you know, if he learns from me along the way, then that's a great thing.
Okay, so I'm going to start out by saying that I don't actually disagree with him completely. It is not his job to mentor anybody. And I do applaud anytime, you know me, when an athlete's honest, even if they say something I disagree with, I love honesty and authenticity from athletes, coaches, GMs, owners, because we don't get it that often. So often we get the PR answers. So I actually appreciate him being honest here. Here's my deal with this, though. He's underperformed, as you and I have talked about at length, ad nauseum. And he's had questionable leadership skills in the past, which you're going to get to more on. So he's not Brett Favre, and he's not Peyton Manning, and he's not one of these guys that is so good that he really doesn't need to mentor anybody because, quite frankly, he's good enough to where he's not obligated to do anything. And if somebody really wants, like if Brett, you know, Aaron Rodgers really wanted to learn from Brett Favre, Andrew Luck really wanted to learn from Peyton Manning, if all of you, blah, 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 they can just watch them. He's not good enough. He's not in that camp yet. So yes, Ryan Tannehill, you're correct. It is not your job to mentor anybody. It is not your job to mentor Malik Willis. You're certainly not obligated to do so. But you pooped the bed with your playoff performance. Your leadership skills have been questionable in the past. And you're not Peyton Manning. And you're not Brett Favre. And you don't have the right to cop this attitude because your performance on the field has not been good enough to do so.
I can't believe I'm about to do what I'm about to do. But you leave me no choice, Vanessa. I actually feel like I have to defend Ryan Tannehill.
Keep in mind, I don't disagree with him completely.
But
he's not obligated. I just don't think he has the clout and the accomplishments to have this kind of attitude.
And that's a fair argument, but I'm about to defend him. And even though, as you mentioned, Vanessa,
it's a dark day.
The leadership side of things, there is this embarrassing story that Aaron Wilson, who was then with the Pro Football Network, wrote about him in 2015, where he was getting pissed off at practice squad players before the Jets absolutely disemboweled the Dolphins in London, where essentially, because he had been struggling so much, the Dolphins coaching staff was telling the practice squad defenders to ease up on Tannehill.
Bad.
But during the practice, right before the game, Tannehill, after a couple of interceptions, said, "Enjoy your practice squad paycheck. Enjoy your practice squad trophy." And it had been going on for the past couple of weeks. So this is in 2015. He could have matured from that point on. But he has no responsibility whatsoever to Malik Willis. None. He is the starting quarterback who is trying to keep control of this team and control of this locker room. And if you show any sign of weakness, what happens there? If somebody is asking you about a third round draft pick quarterback at a press conference, what are you supposed to say? You are not primarily there to be a tutor. No one in the NFL is. And it's funny that you will constantly hear about veterans brought into a locker room. Oh, yeah, he's here to be a mentor. No, those guys are there to play.
Right.
And it's all about the young players to actually ask for advice from these veterans. And you know what? If they ask for advice, you are being a good teammate by giving it to them. But by no means are you obligated to give it to a young player. Malik Willis, from all accounts, seems like a real stand-up guy. I know there's that video of him helping the lady crossing the street.
Yeah, the combine.
Everything about Malik Willis, like the guy is apparently a wonderful person, at least based off of what we hear. And I'm sure that he actually will go out of his way to ingratiate himself to Tannehill and pick Tannehill's brain. But we have seen young quarterbacks, say Tom Brady, doing the same thing with Drew Bledsoe, like picking his brain, but also like learning things about him and trying to find a way so that he could rise to the top. It is a quarterback-driven league. There are only a few jobs available, and this might be the last time Ryan Tannehill ever has a starting gig.
And so, that may be because he's such a bad leader and he underperforms and he thinks that he's one of the great quarterbacks when he's not.
You know what? And look, the irrational confidence, it's not great, but if you're a quarterback, you kind of have to have it because your team needs to believe in you. And after you pooped away, as you said, the playoff game, you need to focus on yourself. Screw Malik Willis. If I'm Ryan Tannehill, I have no obligations to him at all.
It's not my responsibility.
Kurt
Warner tweeting, I will never understand the I'm not here to mentor the next guy mentality. So for all you young quarterbacks that need a mentor, DM me and I'll be that guy. Happy to help in any way I can.
I love you, Kurt Warner. Spare me, Kurt.
I love Kurt Warner. He's so nice.
What a goody two-shoes. Okay. Look.
But it did spark an interesting discussion because you had Darius Butler and Ryan Clark and other former NFL players that agreed with Ryan Tannehill and said it's not his job. Robert Mathis agreed with Ryan Tannehill. You also had some NFL players that came out and said this looks really insecure on the part of Ryan Tannehill and makes him look bad.
It is, but guess what? He has every right to be insecure right now. He has to find a way to make himself seem less insecure.
Are you projecting?
I'm always insecure. So I know these things, but I'm open about my insecurity, therefore making me less insecure. But if you're Ryan Tannehill here, in this situation, you're trying to keep your job, and someone asks you this, it's a third-round draft pick. Like, are you supposed to be saying, I'm just going to turn the job over to him? Like, it's one of those things where he is damned no matter what he says in response to that question. I felt he said, it's not my job. It is not his job. It is his job to win games. It is his job to start under center for the Tennessee Titans.
And he ain't even doing that.
That is fair. He lost them their playoff game. He blew the one seed.
So you know what? Start winning games. Win a playoff game.
But
and then you can cop an attitude and say that you're not going to mentor anybody.
In his defense, a couple of years before, they were in the AFC Championship game. So I like to dump on Ryan Tannehill. I don't think he's anything better on his best day than an above-average quarterback who is really good at play-action fakes and bombing it downfield. We'll see how he is without A.J. Brown. Like I feel like I can't dump on him too much, and I think you got to be a little bit fair to him. Over the last couple of years, he has been a part of the Titans doing this, at where Marcus Mariota could not do any of this stuff. So, like, you have to give him some credit, even if you don't like him as a quarterback and you wouldn't want him on your team. And I don't think he should have to mentor Malik Willis. It is up to Malik Willis to seek that out. And you know what? It's a press conference. Like, I'm sure that when Malik Willis and Ryan Tannehill actually talk to each other, it's not going to turn into Brett Favre versus Aaron Rodgers. I don't think that will necessarily happen, but if it does, that's natural.
A lot of people have asked if Malik Willis would even want to learn from Ryan Tannehill.
See, that's fair.
Is a really, really good point. He did tweet, welcome to the squad, at Malik Willis on April 30th, and he did call Malik Willis. And that is a detail that I think is important because it's not like he's being chippy or short with Malik Willis.
It just said, it's not my job to do that.
Right.
And he is right. It's the bleeping quarterback coach's job to
it
do
is.
This.
It
you know?
Is. I just, from what I've seen from Ryan Tannehill, I think you try to help your team win in any way possible, and he hasn't been able to get it done in the playoffs.
I don't blame you, but him helping his team win in any way possible by mentoring Malik Willis means that he is turning the job over to Malik Willis.
Are sports veterans obligated to be mentors for rookies? I actually say no to this because I'm not saying Ryan Tannehill is obligated. Okay, I think in this case he should, but I think it's case by case basis. But the online discussion was sparked. So do you all think that sports veterans in any sport are obligated to be mentors for rookies? I think when you look at the general American workplace, like let's say that there was a young female aspiring radio host that was interning here and her goal was to do exactly what I'm doing. And day one, somebody was like, okay, are you going to take her under your wing and teach her everything you know and all that? I think there would be part of me that would be like, okay, well, I may give her advice and I'll help her out. But like, am I going to groom somebody to take my job? Probably not.
If they come to me respectfully and ask her advice, yes.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
If I hear they're talking trash behind the scenes, no. And I will bury them.
Right. And this is a little bit of a different situation, too, because Malik, I mean, there's going to be three, maybe four quarterbacks in that room, and somebody's getting the QB1 position.
Yeah.
And so I do understand from that perspective, when you look at the average American workplace, I think most people would say what you just said. They would help, etc.
But you're fighting for your survival in this league. It is a cutthroat league where these teams don't even look at you. They don't look at you as a person. They look at you as a bag of meat that they can use for a couple of years, okay? And I understand why some of these players get to this idea, like, oh, of the plantation mindset. I think that's an extreme hyperbolistic thing to say, but I get it because these teams do not give a damn about what these players do over a couple of years. They're like, yep, we're going to replace them. And that's why you draft the younger player. You expect them to be replaced. And if that young player asks for help, great. Ray Roberts, who is a friend of mine from Seattle, who was a first-round draft pick of the Detroit Lions as a tackle, played for the Seahawks as a tackle as well, he said, no, like any guy came in, I wanted to take them under his wing. And he's a great guy for being that way. But I don't think you should be obligated to feel that way at all.
All right, coming up on Vanessa and Gallant, a little bit of international news. Plus, we're going to get you guys' take on if veteran athletes are obligated to mentor the rookies. That's next.
ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Real fun sports. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
We learned so much about each other during the break.
Devil woman, you are.
We're going to discuss something that happened at a Dave Chappelle show at some point.
Satanic, you are.
And I'm double jointed, so I was showing the guys on the break what I can do with my arms.
We were talking about how there's been a couple of elbow injuries. First off, Gary Payton with the Warriors got hit pretty hard last night. We're going to talk about that hit at some point. And he busted his elbow, so he's probably done for the playoffs. And then also, someone tried to attack Dave Chappelle at a comedy show, and they showed the guy that attacked him. He was getting into a gurney for to be taken to the hospital. His arm is just bent backwards, like someone broke it.
And I said, I can bend my arm backwards.
And then she showed it to me, and I don't. I don't know.
It's twitch.tv/ESPN975.
I'm closing my eyes. I can't look at this again.
I want to figure out if I can blur out the Twitch. If I can just blur it out in real time.
I can't, Sean. I'm uncomfortable. Oh,
it
my
makes
God.
My elbow hurt.
Ow. Ow. I'm a devil woman. I'm satanic.
Somebody on Twitch said, put her in the circus.
Oh, my God. Like the next thing is, please just don't turn your head around in its neck like you're that child in The Exorcist, because that would be too much. That would be a bridge too far.
What we have been discussing is if Ryan Tannehill and other veteran athletes are obligated to mentor rookies. The resounding response, I think, has been no. And just to clear up, I don't think that the obligation is there. I just think that if you have been as big of a failure in some ways as Ryan Tannehill, it's probably better for you to have a good attitude than have a cocky attitude.
You're not being employed to be a tutor. You're not a teacher. That's what coaches are for. You are there to take care of you and you alone. That is my mantra for life.
Get your bag and leave.
Right.
Yeah.
You can always ask for help. You shouldn't feel uncomfortable asking for help. Some people will say yes. Other people will say no. And I would say that if I'm one of these teammates, I would not want to say no, because say there is a point in my career where I'm no longer the player I once was. I want to at the very least be viewed as a possible backup option. But at the same time, I am not going out of my way to help somebody take my job. I'm just not. And now all of these players, I think, should feel that way. So I do not dump on Ryan Tannehill for this. Dump on him for 3 interceptions against the Bengals, sure. But for this, I understand his response, and I don't think it was as bad as it's being made up to be.
I do think it does matter what, because we're saying in sports, like, do athletes, are they obligated to? And I think it depends. The quarterback position is very specific of, there's only one of these guys on the field at the same time.
Yep.
Yeah.
So Malik Willis will be taking Ryan Tannehill's job. It's not like in 2013 when the Texans drafted DeAndre Hopkins and Andre Johnson really took him under his wing. Like that is beneficial, but they can both, he's not actually taking his job.
They can both be on the field.
With, we mentioned the Warriors earlier with Jordan Poole kind of being developed by Steph Curry. Steph Curry kind of bringing him along while he was injured. Now look at the player he is. So I think it depends, A, on the sport, because in basketball you can actually play with someone who is at your same position, like you can share the court. But I do think quarterback, it's you're not obligated to, but I do think it's a maybe you should, especially if you are Ryan Tannehill, because you want the reputation when you
he doesn't have a great
when
reputation.
You inevitably shift your career into being a backup,
right?
And that's
being a good locker room guy. Can help you stick around as a backup in the NFL.
And that story, he might have learned a lot from that story that I brought up. That took place in 2015 before the Jets and Dolphins game in London where the Jets just murdered them. But that is my opinion of who Ryan Tannehill is as a teammate. Hopefully he is better on that front. But
I mean, it's 7 years ago.
Right, it's 7 years ago. I would think that he would be more mature by now. And it does sound like, Vanessa, as you pointed out, like he has reached out. He's made a phone call. This isn't like he's saying,
not being
like,
terrible.
Screw you!
0170 like, brought up a text, I think, that was specifically for me. In sports car endurance racing, where multiple drivers share a car, it's important for experienced drivers to mentor their rookie co-drivers. Yes, it is. Thank you for bringing up racing on my show.
Oh,
I love
there
it.
There we go. Go turn left. 200 miles per hour.
Backups, 0228.
I dropped my hammy.
Says backups that help sometime become assistant coaches in progress or in the NFL.
That's
a
true.
Great point.
That is true. And look, he's not a backup yet. So when he is a backup.
He's holding on.
And he is the clipboard holder like Charlie Whitehurst was for all of those years. Living in his rustic log cabin and playing acoustic guitar on his front porch.
A lot of mentoring going on in the Texans locker room. They always bring in good guys with good reputations. Yeah. And some say, to a fault.
I got to say, one of my favorite conversations in Houston Sports Talk over the last 10 years has been, Vanessa, every now and then, there is always one person who calls in or texts in and says, the Texans have too many nice guys. They got to go after someone mean. They got to go after someone who's done something. And I don't know why they have that accent. I'm projecting, that's for sure. Bart Scott was on the NFL Draft ESPN radio broadcast, and this is just an amazing 1 minute of audio. From start to finish.
You have to be able to get some tough guys, and everybody can't be choir boys. You know. When I was with the Ravens, we had to make sure that we had at least two people on the team with a couple felonies just to make sure our street cred was right. When we had to go into these back alleys and have some of these dog fights. Sometimes you got to have some people that's not no choir boys. That's why you have a strong locker room to hold them in check.
Yeah, but you got to be careful with the felonies.
I said, listen. The funniest sign I've ever seen in my life was 52 plus 31 equals 10 to 20. It was Ray Lewis plus Jamal Lewis equals 10 to 20 in prison. So listen,
oh
you
got
to have some guys with Terrell Suggs beat a dude with a stop sign coming out of Arizona State. You know what I mean? You got to have a couple guys like that. We can clean them up. We can get them counseling. But you got to have a couple of goons, and you definitely got to have some goo goblins. And you got to get a couple.
Oh, boy.
I love the end.
The oh, boy, yeah.
The oh, boy. But also, the better comment, you got to be careful with felons. Oh, thanks. I didn't know that, random ESPN broadcaster. I love Bart Scott because he makes people very uncomfortable when he talks. And obviously, a lot of what he just said there is pretty bleeped up.
But it's true.
Yeah, Terrell Suggs beat up a guy with a stop sign. Terrell Suggs just has done worse than that, by the way, with his girlfriend like that was apparently carrying his child. So, like, to be serious, these are things that you got to wonder about a guy's availability. I think that this is an overblown thing all the time, but I've always gotten a kick, Vanessa, out of Bart Scott. There was another time, too, where I think he was talking about how to he was talking about like how to stay warm or something like that over the course of a game, and I think he like talked about like what he was applying to like his down low and stuff.
Oh my god!
Oh wait, this is it. He said that you got to in cold weather games you got to take Viagra.
Oh, he did say that.
He said this on TV.
He said that, but you know what?
And they were like, "Whoa, you can't say that."
Some other players ended up being like, "Low key, yeah, we used
to
do
like,
that."
But they're like, "Yeah,
yeah, they're
do
like,
that.
We did that."
Yeah, so maybe this is a little bit extreme, but I've always gotten a kick out of people, Vanessa, like saying, like, "Texas need to bring in some bad dudes. They got to bring in some bad guys. Like that's gonna correspond to victories or something like
right.
that."
I will say this: I like walking in the Texans' locker. And listen, I've been hard on the Texans. I like walking in the locker room and knowing that there are nice guys and that they don't have anybody in there convicted of domestic violence. But to Bart Scott's point, could they use some dogs and some tougher players? When you have a team full of Rex Burkheads and other guys like that, I mean, I think your reputation is going to be what it is.
I mean, I think ultimately you don't really know. And you don't want to know either.
Did nice the Patriots, guys can be good at football, too.
Did the Patriots want to know about Aaron Hernandez's backstory? Right. No, they wanted the good football player. And, I mean, before all of the Odin Lloyd stuff, I mean, Aaron Hernandez had plenty of bleep on his resume as far as things that he had done off the field that were seriously...
Murder is mean. Don't do that.
Yes, that is a great point for us.
NFL's full 2022 International Series schedule announced in London. The Vikings will play the Saints on October 2nd. In London, Giants-Packers October 9th. Also in London, Broncos-Jags October 30th. The one game in Munich will be Seahawks-Bucks November 13th. And the one game in Mexico City will be 49ers-Cardinals November 21st. Those are some good matchups. The one in Mexico City, 49ers-Cardinals, I think will be a good one.
I think that makes sense because I think there's a lot of people that live in Mexico that actually are fans of both of those teams. Of course, you've got the London game before Jaguars are always, you know, stuck going over there. I'm sorry. Spare me this Munich game. This is absolute nonsense.
You're not on Team Munich.
What's the game again?
I guess the game in Munich is going to be Seahawks-Bucks.
Seahawks-Bucks. Okay. I thought for a second it was Seahawks-Broncos, and I was like, hey, what? That's bogus.
Yeah, Broncos-Jags is in London.
Okay. So Seahawks-Bucks. Okay, you're exporting the American game to another country. Good luck having any dent whatsoever. Like, you created a vacation destination for football fans, I guess, but the idea that they're doing with this is to try to expand the game's footprint into other countries that just do not give a damn. So,
five games. A lot of international games. All right, coming up on Vanessa and Gallant, we're going to be talking a little bit about the Astros, Dusty Baker's big night, plus Derek Stingley Jr. That's next.
My name is Stephen A. Smith, and you're listening to 98.7.
Wait, what?
I said 98.7. That's my show.
Let's try this one more time, okay?
My name is Stephen A. Smith, and you're listening to 97.5 FM.